Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 20, 2016. The Deputy Governor of Yeyu River State has defected to the SPLM-IO faction loyal to Riek Machar.
The international community must know that there is a problem already in the South, and this is very clearly known. Everybody, UN people, they know it, security council, they know it, but they are lying low. They don't want to intervene. Now, as they are not intervening into that situation, we are going to defend our lives from the oppressor.
And the South Sudanese ambassador to the United Nations admits it's not safe to live in South Sudan.
Our citizens are still not feeling safe, and they are fleeing, or they want to feel where they feel safe, and that is their right. All the government must do is to keep working hard to convince them that there is peace in the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former deputy governor of Yei River State says he has joined the faction of the SPLA in opposition, loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar. Brigadier Abraham Wani says he defected to the SPLA-IO in order to mobilize fighters for Riek Machar in the former Central Equatorial State. Wani says the situation in Yei River State is dire. He says the entire population of the state is traumatized by the atrocities allegedly committed by the South Sudan Army.
It became very painful when your own comrade, your own brother, turned to oppress you when you have been fighting together the same enemy. Now, as I'm talking to you, all the Equatorians have become subject for any mistreatment, tortured, killed, arrested, sodomized, and any other dirty game are being done on Equatorians.
Brigadier Abraham Wani, you are making very strong allegations here. Who is committing these atrocities that you have been listing to me?
It's not an allegation, it is a reality. Last year, when the Security Act that was discussed in the parliament and many other members of the parliament were dismissed because they refused to endorse the Security Act. It was enforced by force and the security elements have been empowered. As I'm talking now, the power of the security is the only power that is being used for arresting the people, killing the people, doing anything, and no security officer can be asked whatever he does. Now, many Equatorians, over thousands of Equatorians, are under arrest. Others are killed, either slaughtered like goats, thrown into water, shot by gun, or beaten by sticks until he is dead. 2 weeks ago, in my own village, over 11 people were slaughtered, including children. In Lanya, a woman that is actually a pastor was killed in the church uniform. Imagine this kind of situation, even if it was you and somebody that does not want to go to war, you will go to war when you see your people are getting killed innocently for no reason.
You were the deputy governor of Yei State, quite a high person in the hierarchy of the government in Yei State. What were you doing to prevent this from happening?
I cannot prevent it because the security has been empowered to do whatever they want to do. And if I was remanded, I would have become even a subject, I can get killed.
And so you're telling me that when security officers in your state, Yei, come over there, they don't even respect a deputy governor?
They don't respect a deputy governor. They don't respect even governor. And by the way, how many governors who are under arrest? Bakasor was under arrest and he was a governor by then. More than twice, he was mistreated, tortured, and humiliated. He was under arrest. Now, the deputy governor of Wau was arrested, and the governor of Wau, Elias Waya, was arrested. It is not the question of being a governor, but the question that the security people are empowered and they have the law in their hand. They can arrest anybody, they can molest anybody, they can kill anybody, they can abuse anybody, and nobody can question them. And not only that, by the way, not only that. Currently, as a situation is there, hundreds of thousands of people are already leaving South Sudan and they're going to Uganda. And the country is becoming completely without people. even if I remain there as a deputy governor, who am I going to govern the people? Them? There is nobody whom I'm going to govern. I will remain only alone as a deputy governor in the forest, maybe only with the animals in the forest and not with the human beings.
And what is your next move now that you are out of South Sudan in East Africa? What are you planning to do?
I'm almost in Equatoria now. I'm in Equatoria. I will get down, and we are going to fight and change that regime, the dictatorial regime, and bring a good government that will respect the people, will improve the economy, and develop our people. Because the reasons why we liberate ourselves was actually to develop the people. There is no development these days. Infrastructures are not there. Roads are not there. No electricity. In the market, when you go to the market, you find that prices have gone very high. It has been 3 times than the salary of the officers of the civil officers. Now, people are not even feeding; they are getting malnourished. They are going hungry, and on that top, food is not. They are not producing anything because there is fighting everywhere. People are not producing food. Those who produce their food are left out. And what are you going to do there?
Why can't you tell President Kiir that what is happening in Central Equatoria is not correct?
They are not getting the agreement was there and they have violated the agreement. So they are not actually the language that they can understand is the only language of the Kalantinkop. And that's the only language that they can understand. Not talking to them. Because if you talk to them, nobody will listen to you. The international community must know that there is a problem already in the South. And this is very clearly known. Everybody, you and people, they know it. Security Council, they know it, but they are lying low. They don't want to intervene. Now, as they are not intervening into that situation, we are going to defend our lives from the oppressor and from that dictatorial regime.
That's Brigadier Abraham Wani, former deputy governor of Yei River State, who has defected to join the SPLA in opposition faction loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. During his final address to the UN General Assembly, U.S. President Barack Obama said the United Nations must address the global refugee crisis and urge member countries to empathize with the hundreds of thousands of refugees and migrants. As INBO reports, the president's speech comes days after the UN Refugee Agency reported that the violence in South Sudan has produced more than 1 million refugees.
In his address just a few hours ago, President Obama highlighted the global refugee crisis and security threats from terrorist organizations. But the president spent most of his time speaking about democratic ideals that allow people and their economies to grow. He said the countries that have succeeded are the ones whose people feel as though they have a stake in their economic future.
I believe the road of true democracy remains the better path. I believe that in the 21st century, economies can only grow to a certain point until they need to open up. Because entrepreneurs need to access information in order to invent. Young people need a global education in order to thrive. Independent media needs to check the abuses of power.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hit on the same points during his address earlier in the day, chastising the leaders of South Sudan as a prime example of leaders who fail to restore peace and security in their countries and build nations based on democratic values.
In South Sudan, leaders have also betrayed their people. Indeed, in too many places, we see leaders rewriting constitutions, manipulating elections, and taking other desperate steps to cling to power. Leaders must understand that holding office is a trust granted by the people, not personal property. My message to all is clear. Serve your people. Do not subvert democracy. Do not pilfer your country's resources. Do not imprison and torture your critics.
President Obama said his beliefs, which are rooted in democracy and equal representation, were heavily influenced by the story of America. But he reminded observers that those ideals are not unique to the United States.
Now, I will admit, my belief that governments serve the individual and not the other way around is shaped by America's story. Our nation began with a promise of freedom that applied only to the few, but because of our democratic constitution, because of our Bill of Rights, because of our ideals, ordinary people were able to organize and march and protest and ultimately those ideals won out.
President Obama's address comes just days after the UN's refugee agency said that South Sudan had reached the 1 million mark in the number of refugees it has produced since the conflict erupted in late 2013. Akoibona Malol, South Sudan's top representative to the UN, says despite those figures, the country is moving toward peace and stability. Speaking to VOA yesterday, Bona said his top priority this week will be convincing UN officials that his government is in fact moving towards peace and stability.
On the issue of the refugees, of course, it's unfortunate that our citizens are still not feeling safe and they are fleeing, or they want to feel where they feel safe, and that is their right. It's all the government must do is to keep working hard to convince them that there is peace in the country.
Bona says he hopes that the government and UN officials eventually finalize the stipulations on the 4,000-strong protection force to be sent to South Sudan. First Vice President Taban Dengai arrived in New York last night to participate in the 71st UN General Assembly proceeding this week. Deng is expected to address the General Assembly on Friday. But in the meantime, his delegation, joined by South Sudan's mission at the UN, will hold bilateral meetings on matters of peace and security in the country. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. officials are still trying to piece together what happened on the night of July 7th when seven American diplomats were returning to the U.S. embassy from a farewell dinner and were ambushed by members of the South Sudan Presidential Guard. As Carol Van Dam reports for VOA from Washington, the diplomats were leaving the party early to avoid fighting that broke out in the South Sudanese capital.
It's an incident that has not been talked about all that much in the aftermath of the deadly violence that erupted in Juba in early July, but could have had grave consequences if any American diplomats had been killed. South Sudanese army troops fired up to 100 rounds at two SUVs, which included high-ranking U.S. Embassy official James Donegan, when they passed the presidential palace. If the people in the convoy had not been traveling in armored vehicles, they could have been killed instantly. Writer Colm Lynch interviewed several people involved in the incident for an article in this month's U.S. Foreign Policy magazine. Lynch says it's still not clear whether or not the Presidential Guard received direct orders from the Kiir administration to attack the U.S. vehicles.
No, there is no evidence that these forces were given orders that they were going after the Americans. My understanding is what some of the people in the convoy feel is that once they stopped for the convoy, it was pretty clear that they were an American diplomatic sort of delegation. There's an American flag card on the windshield, the front windshield. They have their license plate numbers, diplomatic plates.
Eventually, a U.S. Marine rapid response team from the U.S. Embassy rescued three of the Americans and their South Sudanese driver. Lynch says the official State Department position is that things were too chaotic at the time to believe the soldiers were acting on orders.
The State Department is kind of they're more along the kind of chaos narrative, that things were falling to hell, the official State Department position, and that these guys kind of just walked into this chaotic situation. And no one has indicated that they were drunk, that they were completely kind of lawless. But, you know, this is not, you know, a well-organized, well-disciplined military, including the most elite, you know, presidential guard.
Lynch says the State Department provided conflicting accounts of whether the department conducted a formal investigation into what happened. One official said it had not, while another said it carried out some type of investigation. Both officials say the U.S. has demanded that the South Sudanese government investigate the attack and hold the perpetrators responsible. Lynch says the State Department is downplaying the entire event, saying there's no way to tell if the presidential guards knew they were shooting at U.S. diplomats.
I mean, nobody knows the motivation, but there are, you know, a couple of sort of narratives that have kind of developed among sort of people who follow this is that on the one hand, perhaps the South Sudanese government, which has resisted and resented to a certain degree international pressure and U.S. pressure to accept a kind of power-sharing agreement with President Kiir's bitter rival, Riek Machar, and that they have an interest in getting Westerners out of the country so there are no prying eyes when and if the government continues to prosecute its war against followers of Riek Machar.
The other view is that the South Sudan government and rebel leaders may be increasingly losing control over their own forces, a view that falls more into line with the official State Department position on the ambush. Lynch says his sources, who have direct knowledge of the incident, confirm the target was, in his words, crystal clear, given the American flag on display of the front windshield on both armored vehicles, and both were bearing official diplomatic license plates of the U.S. Embassy. He says it was sheer good fortune, according to his sources, that the whole thing didn't end in a bloody diplomatic tragedy. Lynch finds it quite astonishing that to date, no suspects have been identified.
Here we have an attack by the Presidential Guard against six American diplomats, including the second highest ranking American official in South Sudan, and no one has been identified. I mean, this is an attack that took place right outside the presidential palace.
We'll look at U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Molly Fee's role in the aftermath of the ambush in our next report. For VOA News, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the country's constitutions. More on that after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you goal-oriented, or do you wait to see what happens?
I am goal-oriented, but then I am more of a procrastinator. So I normally wait until the last moment, then I bring out the best in me.
Yes, I'm goal-oriented because I'm always having a vision and I'm always following my dreams.
I don't wait for something to happen. I actually struggle for something. I struggle to see that I fulfill what I'm looking for.
I'm oriented. I don't just wait for things to happen.
Since I'm a believer, I think things come in their own way. Yeah, you can have a target, maybe you don't achieve it, and you may not have a target and things come up.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about tuberculosis. Researchers are scratching their heads following the discovery that tuberculosis may not be completely gone in those who are deemed cured. A recent study found that evidence of the bacterium that causes TB remains after treatment. VOA's Jessica Barman reports.
Months after being treated for pulmonary tuberculosis with a rigorous antibiotic regimen, 99 HIV-negative individuals in Cape Town, South Africa, had their lungs imaged. Investigators at Stellenbosch University used a CT scan, a more detailed form of X-ray, and PET scans that glow brightly to reveal the presence of lung abnormalities. Imaging in 76 of those patients thought to be cured showed continued inflammation in the lungs and lesions similar to those of untreated patients. 1 year after treatment, 50 patients showed similar lung issues, although most of the lesions had decreased in size. 16 patients with some abnormalities picked up in the scans were otherwise free of lesions. Researchers also detected genetic material in the saliva and mucus of 34 patients, an indication that live bacteria remained in their lungs. The researchers were stunned.
Oh, yeah. They certainly were.
U.S. National Institutes of Health senior scientist Clifton Berry runs the tuberculosis research section and co-authored the study, published in the journal Nature Medicine.
We were quite surprised to see the residual findings at the end of treatment and the evidence of presence of actually live bacteria in patients that we called cured of tuberculosis.
Barry says investigators do not know what the implications are. Could such patients relapse? And if so, could their infections become resistant to antibiotics? A six-month course of antibiotics has been the gold standard in treating TB patients who afterwards usually show no symptoms of the disease.
I think the question is, you know, is that really enough? And do we need to think about potentially looking more carefully at patients at the end of treatment and evaluating in a different algorithm how we treat individual patients?
One-third of the world's population is infected with tuberculosis. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says 9.5 million people become sick and 1.5 million die. In more closely assessing TB patients, researchers say treatment regimens may need to be tailored to different individuals. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move back to Juba, where South Sudan's leader of the minority in the parliament says the transitional constitution should be amended to include provisions of the August 2015 peace agreement. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
Onyoti Adigo admits the minority leader's position is not provided for in the transitional National Assembly, but says he wants parliament to follow proper procedures to change the leadership of the assembly, which has been reconstituted in accordance with the August peace agreement. He says lawmakers should amend the assembly's conduct of business regulations.
If this conduct of business is amended and the leadership of the assembly is dissolved, all either they come back to their position or not come back to their position, this new conduct of business will not help leader minority.
The National Assembly recently amended a section of regulations and appointed a new speaker and two deputies. But other positions, including chairpersons of specialized committees, are yet to be changed. Adigo says now that South Sudan's parliament has been reconstituted, lawmakers should quickly pass the new conduct of business regulations so the entire leadership of the transitional National Legislative Assembly can be dissolved.
And take it from me, it is going to get dissolved because you are going to form new administration. The only people who are now belong to the transitional National Legislative Assembly is the speaker and his deputies.
The agreement for the resolution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan proposes the formation of a constitutional amendment committee to rectify the constitution with the peace deal. Adigo says so far that committee has achieved nothing.
The constitutional amendment committee, which is in the agreement here, should start working now so that the agreement is put together with the constitution. But that is not working now. Even the reform is not being made.
Last week, the chair of the Information Committee in the Transitional National Assembly, Oliver Mori, said there will be three chief whips selected from the ruling SPLM party, the SPLM in opposition, and the third from the other political parties. The SPLM, the SPLM Tabandeng faction, and other political parties allied to the SPLM under the umbrella organization National Agenda Alliance have appointed their chief whips. But Adigo says the agreement does not provide for the appointment of whips. He says the agreement identifies stakeholders and whips should be appointed from all five stakeholders, that's the SPLM, SPLM-IO, former detainees, the National Alliance and the National Agenda Alliance. Adigo says members of parliament's specialized committees should also be appointed according to power-sharing ratios stipulated in the peace agreement.
The Transitional Assembly this time should work by consensus. This time, there is no need to be bitter among ourselves.
Adigo says if real reform is to take place, decisions by the National Assembly should be made by consensus, not by majority. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we move to DRC, where three opposition headquarters were burned overnight, and opposition leaders say the death toll from Monday's protest was higher than the 17 reported by the government. From Kinshasa, William Close has the latest.
There were sporadic clashes between police and groups of young men early Tuesday in some parts of the capital. Unusually for Kinshasa, trucks full of soldiers from the Republican Guard were out on the streets. Heavier violence took place overnight as armed men set fire to at least five headquarters of opposition parties that had helped organise the protests Monday. Several pro-government parties saw their offices burned down during those protests. Félix Tshisekedi, a leading figure in the largest opposition party, the UDPS, spoke to reporters Tuesday as people picked through the remains of his headquarters in Limité, an opposition stronghold.
There was a commando...
Tshisekedi says commandos from the ruling party arrived at 2 a.m. and went to work until 4:30 a.m. They attacked and killed our guards, he said. There are five dead. Tshisekedi went on to say that the DRC is a dictatorship, and he says this government deserves the popular revolt that is coming to topple it. He later told VOA by phone that the death toll from the overnight attack has risen to seven, and others are still missing. Emery Akunji, a parliamentarian from another party targeted during the night, told VOA that heavily armed men smashed down the door just before 5 a.m. and threw bombs, setting fire to the building. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told VOA by phone that the government has called on the public prosecutor to expand his investigation into Monday's unrest to include the violence overnight. We do not know who is responsible for these attacks, Mende said. But as a government, we condemn anyone who takes it upon themselves to seek vengeance. He said that the government will wait for the prosecutor to finish the inquiry into who is responsible for the violence. The opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, or the Assembly, had organized a march Monday to demand that President Kabila step down in December when his second term ends. The Electoral Commission, however, has delayed the elections, saying it may need until 2018 to create a new voter roll. The opposition asserts that Kabila simply wants to stay in power. Opposition leaders say security forces obstructed their planned march on Monday, firing tear gas to disperse protesters as they gathered. The government says it had withdrawn authorization for the demonstration after violence from the protesters. The Interior Minister said 17 people were killed, 3 policemen and 14 civilians. But Human Rights Watch says it has received credible reports that security forces have killed at least 37 people since the protests began. The group's DRC researcher, Ida Sawyer, told VOA that most were killed when the security forces fired on crowds of protesters. She says others died when security forces burned down opposition party headquarters. Sawyer also says that Human Rights Watch has received credible reports that protesters have killed at least 6 police officers and a supporter of President Kabila's party, and have also burned and looted several shops and police stations. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Longonyo by Colonel Mido.
Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe, Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe. Gurushu takide mabido funita ya sabi, Gurushu takide mabodita fisamae. Saidu masakine, Saidu akwana kulwe, Saidu masakine. Hey yakwana, ainu takumlokuluku. Makalam gurush, rasto biga kebin. Makalam gurush, biga mabiseli munasisika. Aba halkulu, makalam gurush. Sokolongonyo la di jwa kenisa Budi gurushu ya Ah, lo gulukuk Gurushu mabi dofunita Eta bisibu gurushu de kulu fi dunia Nina kulu sawa ya kwana kaye Nina kulu sawa ya kwana kaye Kanita patroe wale ta longonyo Kanita longonyo e wale idata kisere dia Nina kulu sawa Nina kulusawa ya kwana tae Kanita kawaja waleta junubie Kanita junubie waleta mundukurwe Kanita mundukurwe waleta hafukas Nina kulusawa ya kwana tae Hiya! Hello kuluku, soko longonyo vigaziana Ida zeridia ziada. Jena.
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Longonyo. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.